Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
So as we were speaking yesterday during our live show, somebody shared in the chat about something going on in Syria. And as we said we would follow up, we are indeed today. It turns out that yet again, Syria was attacked by Israel. We also have a story involving Gaza firing rockets apparently into Israel, but as always, we're getting half the story, as it turns out that they're retaliating from attack from the day before, as we're going to cover in our show today. There's a lot of good stuff to cover in regard to Syria. There's some interesting things in regard to Iran as well. There's, as always, you're not going to hear any of this on the mainstream media. As a quick check before I went live, we have the main story in Fox News is about a major storm in the Midwest. And on CNN, we're talking about, you know, the shutdown and the border wall, as I continue to tell you, is intentionally designed to keep you from paying attention to what's really going on. Not to say that the wall is not an important topic. As I continue to point out, our immigration policy in this country is absolutely ridiculous. That being said, it's consuming everything else we're talking about. So let's get into the big story, two of which involving Israel to begin today. And these are indeed, in my mind, the biggest story happening, at least in the moment, that's getting completely ignored by the mainstream media, as is every story that makes Israel look like the bad guy, which they all too often are. And that's not a biased opinion. That's simply looking at the facts, which we'll do. So let's check out the first story. This one coming from South Front that I saw yesterday that they were breaking last night as it was happening, entitled Israel Once Again Strikes Damascus International Airport. Once again is important because we continue to show you at least 12, 13 times that we can prove Israel has attacked Syria unprovoked. And it's many more times than that. There's times where they don't acknowledge it, where they can't prove it. End of the day, unprovoked attacks. And this is very relevant before we get into the next story in regard to Gaza, as they continue to cry foul about how dare Gaza attack Israel unprovoked, even though it's not unprovoked. But in this case, absolutely 100% unprovoked in regard to Syria, as they do regularly. So Israeli warplanes carried out an airstrike on a depot in the Damascus International Airport in the late hours of January 11th, last night. A military source told the Syrian Arab news agency Sana. Says, quote, at 23:15, Israeli warplanes coming from the direction of Galilee in northern Israel launched several missiles at the outskirts of the Damascus International Airport. Our air defense immediately responded to the hostile missiles and shot most of them down, according to the source. Now, Sana news agency said that the Syrian Arab Air Defense Forces, or SIAD, had intercepted at least 8 Israeli missiles over the Syrian capital of Damascus, and only a warehouse at Damascus International Airport was hit. Now, several videos released by pro-government activists and locals confirmed this. Now, up until that point, we're taking one side of the story. We're taking Syrian news media to tell us that it's Israeli planes that were involved. Now, moving forward from that, as they report following the strike, Israel warplanes were seen flying at high speed and low altitude over the southern Lebanese city of Tyre. Actually, interestingly enough, looked it up yesterday to pronounce it correctly, and I forget already. But the point is that they were seen flying away by locals on the ground. So more evidence that Israel was in fact involved here, even though it's pretty clear that's what happened. Now, experts believe that the warplanes were on their way back to Israel airspace after completing their mission. Now, this will be the second Israel attack on Syria just in the last few weeks. We covered the December 25th attack where they attacked on Christmas, attacked Syria while using civilian airliners to cover their attack. Which, as this story fleshes out, we may find out they did yet again, because people are asking questions about why the S-300s did not fire on the planes and so on. But as these stories develop, we'll get more information to you. But the Israeli warplanes targeted on the 25th several military positions around the Syrian capital of Damascus, mind you, while they're celebrating Christmas. And as I continue to point out, Syria has one of the largest Christian populations in the Middle East. Now, while Israel sources claimed that at the time that the positions were being used by Iranian forces as their go-to excuse, the airstrikes injured several Syrian service members, I believe one that died on Christmas. Now, this is the second just in the last few weeks. This is an unprovoked attack on Syria, which is a violation of international law, And despite the fact that they're in working with the U.S. and France and other people are illegally occupying Syria. As I understand it, UK forces were just hurt in Syria recently or killed. They're illegally occupying Syria. This should not be okay by any stretch of the imagination, but it continues to happen. And as we recently reported, the U.S. has, and we just, I think, yesterday reported on the fact that Bolton said, yes, Israel, you have the right to defend yourself. And this is what we talked about. That's what defend yourself meant. Yes, go ahead and attack Syria. We have your back, as they've continued to point out time and time again. As Israel continues to violate international law, as the majority of the international community continues to condemn, but as long as the U.S. has their back, they're going to continue to violate international law and illegally attack Syria. Because what's it going to matter when the U.S. is also illegally occupying Syria? And Israel is also illegally occupying Syria in the Golan Heights. And as Turkey moves in, which we'll touch on in a moment, to also continue to illegally occupy Syria. This is an absolute crime. And ask yourself why that the mainstream media is refusing to report on it. So as this continues to flesh out, we will continue to give you more information. But as we have it now, Israel has once again attacked Syria, unprovoked, violating international law, as is their usual go-to. And moving on to the next story, which is breaking, as I understand, happening as we speak. I believe the attack happened within the last 45 to an hour, just recently. We have reports that, this is coming from Haaretz, projectile fired at Israel from Gaza 24 hours after deadly border clashes. Now, from most Israeli-based media, we're having this as Gaza fired on Israel, which is what happened. Which is absolutely what happened. Well, we're getting conflicting reports even within that. But there's more to this story. As the article reports, the Israeli military just confirmed a projectile was fired at Israel from Gaza shortly after rocket alarm sirens sounded in Gaza border communities. The sirens sounded 24 hours after Israel struck two Hamas targets following violent protests at the fence separating Israel and the Gaza Strip, in which Gaza authorities said a Palestinian woman was killed and at least 14 other people were wounded by Israeli fire. So yet again, we have the full story where Israel attacks Hamas, attacks Gaza, and then they fire, and then Gaza decides to fire back, and they point to them and cry foul. In the midst of calling this an unprovoked attack, while Israel literally just attacked Syria unprovoked. The hypocrisy makes my head spin. But you won't hear both sides from the mainstream media. Now, it's not to say that Hamas and Gaza or whoever were there were not doing things that many might object to. Lighting tires on fire, throwing explosives. But the point is that this is occupied Palestine, as I continue to point out at all of these locations. Even in regard to Turkey and Syria, or even the Kurds in Syria, even if they may not have negative intentions, they're illegally occupying a sovereign nation. So they're in the wrong, no matter what they do. Very simple. And as Gaza continues to fight back against the open-air prison that they're forced into, which anybody that's not blinded by mainstream propaganda can see the harsh and unbelievably restricted conditions that these people are forced to live in, you can understand why they might want to fight back. Very similar to what we just saw in Yemen, where they're condemning their drone strike as some kind of an unprecedented breach of the ceasefire, even though Saudi Arabia has never even stopped firing on Yemen during the ceasefire. And the moment that that the Houthis in Yemen fire back, they cry foul. It's exactly what we're seeing here. Now, this is an ongoing back and forth between these, but we're talking about occupied Palestine, Israel illegally occupying a country just like they're doing in Syria, despite what they're going to try to lie to you and tell you that, oh, there's no such place as Palestine. Well, history seems to think otherwise. And this is an important thing to understand in this entire context. Now, ultimately, no casualties or injuries have resulted. And as I said, there's conflicting reports where some say that the missile was shot down. And some say that it fell back into Gaza, which is interesting, which kind of shows you that even on the Israeli side, they're trying to not sure how they want to sell you this story, which ultimately the way they try to sell you the story has very little to do with the truth. It's about trying to label them as all terrorists and instead of a occupied country trying to fight for its freedom, which is ultimately what we're talking about here, which doesn't mean you're not going to see missiles being launched into Israel and vice versa. But the point is, Israel, the illegal state of Israel that's occupying Palestine is at fault in regard to what we're talking about here. That's the bottom line. That's not an emotional stance. That's not a biased stance. That's simply the facts. And you won't hear that from the mainstream media. Now, in related news, here's an example of what we would call a double standard. Speaking of Israel, this was shared on Twitter multiple times, which I recently pointed out. And I think this is something that will really upset Christians in the United States, especially those staunch Christian Zionists who seem to support Israel for some crazy reason, even though they don't think very much of your religion. Now, this is shared by Jake Morfonios. Jewish art museum in Israel outrages Christian community by showcasing Ronald McDonald clown nailed to a cross. The Jews call this art the McJesus. Now, as most people others have pointed out, and I'm going to get to the next tweet, just imagine if this was in the reverse. The outrage about making fun of other kind of religions in this country, but free game to make fun of Christianity. This should upset many people, just simply because it's a ridiculous double standard, and it does show you their absolute lack of respect for the Christian religion, at least in this regard. I'm not saying all Jews or all of Israel thinks this way, even though that may be the case. Just in this specific case, and it's not about the fact that it's everyone, but the fact that they're ignoring that people are upset about this, because they don't have to do anything about it. But if it was in reverse, it would be a national scandal. Now, here's another tweet, which was it basically said, an Israeli exhibition of arts in Haifa accused of being offensive to Christians after hosting many abusive contents for Jesus and Mary. Many Christians protested and asked them to be removed, but the exhibition turned a blind eye. Again, imagine if this was the other way around. It would be pretty unacceptable. Here's another one that's pretty damn offensive. To make, basically consumerism tie in with Christianity. Now, you could argue these cases, but the bottom line is this is meant to belittle the concept of Christianity. Regardless of what your stance is, the point of this is denigrating, it's bringing down the concept of it's really belittling, as I said, the concept of what we believe is Christianity, making it seem lesser than theirs, at least in the eyes of these people who made this art. And the bigger story is that despite the fact that people are upset about it, they just ignored them. Now, pretend this was the other way around. That wouldn't happen for a second. Double standards all over the place. So let's move on to another story in regard to Syria, something that I definitely think is incredibly important. Another article, a great article, as always, coming from Moon of Alabama, entitled New York Times Laments U.S. Disengagement Even As There Is None, which is an important thing to think about. So far, we have, some trucks leaving. And actually, as I've recently reported, a whole entourage of ships and helicopters and troops actually on their way back to Syria, reportedly to take some troops home, but we'll see how that works out. So on its front page, as the article reports, of the New York Times, they deliver it as Moon of Alabama puts it, an utterly deranged news analysis of the possible end to the illegal occupation of East Syria by the United States military. The New York Times writes, as U.S. exits Syria, Mideast faces a post-American era, which, by the way, is the cause of all of these problems to begin with, goes on to say, when Turkey, Iran, and Russia meet to talk about the end of the war in Syria, they do so without the United States. Peace talks to solve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict have been frozen for years. But the long-awaited Trump plan to break the impasse has yet to arrive. And this is the ridiculous part, again, about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The point is the Israelis don't want any kind of a deal with the Palestinians, despite what they pretend, what they claim they do, because the deals belittle everything about them. And they claim that, oh, look, they refused our deal. They want nothing to do with this. But when you really dive into the information, it's clear that it's not any way, shape, or form a fair deal. That's important to understand. Now, I'm actually going to try to remember to end with the clip. I promised somebody I was going to start with it today, and I actually forgot. But the clip of the member of parliament from Ireland pointing out all the things I continue to say. That they say that Palestinians are less than human. That they don't think they deserve anything. That they should annihilate them and then go kill their families. Kind of like Trump said about the other terrorists. And you should ask the question, they call the Palestinians terrorists, so who's really the terrorists here? But anyways, the New York Times article goes on to say, and now, despite conflicting messages about how and when it will happen, the United States is set to withdraw from Syria. The withdrawal, which the military said began with equipment removal on Friday, is just the latest instance of a broader American disengagement from the Middle East. How terrible. That could have lasting effects on one of the world's most volatile regions. Ignoring the fact that it's volatile because of the U.S. occupation. Now, again, he points out the U.S. has not and likely will not disengaged from the Middle East. Its military has some 53,000 soldiers stationed in at least 27 bases in 12 Middle Eastern countries, not including those in Syria. And that's not to mention the fact that the U.S. has 800 bases in the world that we know about. And it also has, as Abby Martin pointed out, soldiers in 70% of the world's nations. Now he goes on in the article to point out, besides the troops, there are a large number of civil personnel supporting or replacing them. Now, this is where it gets important. Somebody recently reached out to me, and I'm going to share this in a moment, Abby Martin's New Empire Files, which I've continued to point out to those who have been watching this channel, that regardless of what troops the U.S. decides to remove, there's many more mercenaries, military contractors, proxies that are all there that outnumber that 5-1. So there's really no point. It's not even really a relevant drawdown. But as he points out, as of July 2018, again, excluding Afghanistan, there were 22,323 Pentagon contractors working in the CENTCOM area of operations in the Middle East, including 9,762 U.S. citizens, 12,020 third country nationals, and 541 host country nationals. This represents a 15% year-on-year increase in Pentagon contractors utilized in the region. Now, the deployment of contractors to fulfill missions that 15 to 20 years ago would have been conducted by U.S. troops gives the impression of a smaller American military footprint in the region when that's absolutely not the truth. Now, again, I have the link to Abby Martin's recent video, Trump's Syria Deception, in the show notes for you to check out. But here's the point that she makes that I thought was incredibly relevant. That right now, there are 5,500 U.S.-paid mercenaries in Syria. So we're talking about a drawdown of 2,000 that haven't even left yet, and there are currently 5,500 U.S.-paid mercenaries in Syria. I feel like I said 1,000. It's 5,500 U.S.-paid mercenaries in Syria. Now, this is where they pretend, well, we don't have any troops there. It's a pretend lack of presence. As he said, it's civilian contractors, there's proxies, there's this is how they misrepresent the story. And it's also worth mentioning that Trump has increased civilian casualties by 215% since he's been in office. Just 6,000 civilians in the area killed in just 2017. And about 287 new sanctions on Syria. Clearly, they have no intention of leaving this area. Now, the article also points out the U.S. has large economic interests in the Middle East. As we all know, the U.S. weapons sales in the region add up to more than $5 billion per year. Some 17% of U.S. oil imports, 1.75 million barrels per day, come from the Middle East. The control of the hydrocarbon fuels found in the Middle East is one of the official reasons the U.S. imposes itself over the region. That will not change. So this is important to understand that the point they make in this article is how New York Times is wringing its hands over, oh my God, they're going to be leaving, sir, but they're not. And I think this is all part of some larger manipulation to make us think, because we read that they're worried about it in New York Times, that it's actually happening. As in reality, we're seeing a shift in perception, a shift in agenda. Let's tag out these 2,000 people and actually move them over to Iraq. Don't tell anybody. And then bring in some civilian contractors that do the exact same thing and continue to destabilize the country. As Abby Martin also points out, there are aggressively surrounding Syria at every single point. Iraq, Jordan, Israel, all the way around. Turkey. So there's really, as they can continue to destabilize them from there, just fine. So please, even those Trump supporters out there, don't just, as Caitlin points out, please watch for their actions, not their rhetoric, because they are aggressively trying to manipulate you. Now moving on to another story in relation to Syria coming from South Front, this one entitled, Turkish-backed militants hand over strategic airbase in Idlib to Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, to Al-Qaeda. Interesting how this is developing. How even if Turkey takes over the illegal occupation of NATO, they're falling right in lockstep with what the U.S. has been doing in Syria. You know, working with the extremists on the ground. Now, this is something we probably shouldn't be too shocked about, as Turkey has worked hand-in-hand with ISIS for a very long time, as they all have. But Jaish al-Ahrar, I believe it's pronounced, a part of the National Front for Liberation, the coalition, which Turkish-backed militants, recently handed over Taft Anaz airbase in the eastern Idlib countryside to Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, an affiliate of al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, according to Syrian opposition activists on the ground. Now, according to the available information, this step was a part of a surrender agreement, which the NFL, or the National Front for Liberation Coalition, accepted a few days ago. We just talked about this supposed 15-day truce, but I didn't understand that this surrender agreement, as they're claiming, it actually involved handing over part of Idlib. Now, the Turkish-backed group apparently will also have to hand over all of its heavy weapons in Idlib to Hayat Tahrir al-Sham. So they're now giving more weapons to al-Qaeda. This seems like a bit more than a 15-day truce where fighting is going to resume. Something is off here. Now, I don't think it should surprise us that these NATO groups are at least pretending to, you know, stand against these al-Qaeda groups, but in reality, they're giving them more territory, giving them more weapons. It's hard to ignore what we're looking at here. But that's an update on the ground, and we'll say, well, now, so we currently have U.S. troops on the ground not leaving. We have Turkey moving its way in, threatening U.S. if they're not going to move, they're going to come in anyway, which I kind of think is a manipulation overall. We'll have to wait and see how it works out. And now we have a massive entourage of U.S. troops and ships and helicopters coming on the way to Syria. Again, I don't feel good about the way this is developing, even though on one hand they're saying, oh, we're leaving, don't worry, when it looks like the exact opposite at face value. Narrative versus actions. We have to think about this. Now, speaking of Syria, guess who just announced they were running for president? Many of you may have already seen this. Tulsi Gabbard is now announcing, according to Politico, that she is running for president. Now, at face value, for those that may be fans of her, and there's plenty of good things that she has said, I have been warning about this exact kind of thing for a long time. Actually, if you look up my older videos, right after the 2016 election, my prediction was a Tulsi Gabbard run, potentially under, you know, the new anti-establishment candidate. Now, I'm not saying I know for sure that Tulsi Gabbard doesn't have good intentions. I have no idea. Based on what she continues to say, it seems like she's one of only people in Congress that actually have a sane view of what's going on. But then we have to realize that she's a member on the Council on Foreign Relations, that she has basically all the same ties that make you wonder if this is just yet another manipulation setting her up for a presidential run to carry out the same agenda we've been seeing for decades. But, well, in addition to that, the relation to her in Syria, which is what I think is very interesting, some of her own party is actually calling her an Assad apologist, a shill for Assad, or Assad's mouth in Congress, which is very interesting. Seeing this kind of shift away from, you know, Putin, Putin, Putin to Assad, Assad, or rather just kind of together, but continuing to label her as some kind of a agent, which is they need a new playlist, politics in the U.S. we need to get rid of this secret agent working for another country ploy, which is possible, but there's no evidence to support that. Other than the fact that Tulsi Gabbard actually acknowledges the facts instead of blindly following what the media says. Oh, she's a shill because she knows what's going on. Interesting. But we'll keep track of this. She's definitely running, and I think she likely has a very good chance. But as I argued, it's going to be another anti-establishment rise in 2020, when in fact it's likely nothing of the kind. Because they recognized the recipe last year worked. If we pretend to give you someone who's fighting the establishment, you're going to bite on it, even though they're going to come in and carry on the same agenda that we always had. When all their fans are going to say, oh, well, they're trying, they're just getting stopped by the Democrats or they're getting stopped by the Republicans, just like they said about Obama. But guess what? The same agenda continues to move forward, regardless of who sits in that White House. Until we can recognize that, little's going to change. But I will admit she has said many things about Yemen, about Syria, that I greatly respect. She's one person that went to Syria and actually pointed out, hey, guess what? There's no such thing as a moderate rebel. And now that's why they all call her crazy, because she's willing to speak the truth. But that does not mean we should blindly believe that she has good intentions. The system is they plan these things well in advance. So just have to recognize that. As I always say, question everything. Even the people we think we can believe in, such as someone like Rand Paul, who I think has very good intentions, except he votes in terrible ways, including in regard to the anti-BDS bill. Something we have to recognize, these people play the political game. They don't get in these positions without playing the game. We have to think about that. Now, as they're calling her Assad's mouthpiece, calling her a shill for Assad, but I'll tell you what, if you want to see what a real shill looks like in U.S. politics, this here is what a real shill looks like in U.S. politics.
John Bolton. The U.S. will not recognize the Maduro dictatorship's illegitimate inauguration. We will continue to increase pressure on the corrupt regime, support the Democratic National Assembly, and call for democracy and freedom in Venezuela. Oh, you're such a good person, John Bolton. This is so frustrating to see. Not only because we continue to point out that this is completely disconnected from the facts. Recognize the only person that refuses to recognize the legitimacy. Now, I'm not saying Maduro's a good person. I'm not saying Venezuela is a good place to live. I'm simply saying the facts show undeniably that the election was completely legitimate. There were, I think, over 30 international observers there that all said the same thing, that it was completely fair. And actually, Jimmy Carter, of all people, former president, said that this was one of the most legitimate elections he had ever seen. Think about that for a second before you think I'm crazy for not talking about how terrible Venezuela is. It's actually unbelievable to see that people can listen to this without, I mean, there's nothing to support the claim that this is a dictatorship or an illegitimate election. And we have to actually continue to acknowledge the absolutely unbelievably aggressive U.S. foreign policy in regard to Venezuela. I'm sure it has nothing to do with their massive gold reserves or their massive oil reserves. I'm sure it has nothing to do with that, or that they're dropping the dollar, or that they refuse to bend to U.S. foreign policy. I'm sure it has nothing to do with that. It's only because they care about democracy. And you know what? They're willing to kill all of your people and civilians to prove it. Unbelievable. Hopefully people can recognize the absurdity of people like John Bolton. This is what a shill looks like. Now, in another shill, let's just take a look at another shill. Here is the exact same kind of thing. Both of these people working in tandem, as it would seem, kind of against what Donald Trump says he wants, to actually continue to create more problems in the Middle East, invade more countries, all under this guise that, guess what, the U.S. are the good guys. They've only ever done good in the world. And if anyone says otherwise, you're a crazy conspiracy theorist. This coming from Mint Press News, Middle East fact meets fiction. Mike Pompeo touts U.S. goodness and then threatens more of it. I love your titles always make me, that's very well put. Basically saying, oh, we're the best people ever and we only do good things, but we're going to come and do more of it and invade more countries if you don't listen to us. These people are very, very dangerous. And they've had this agenda for a very long time, as he pointed out, John Bolton specifically was a signatory on the Project for the New American Century, which called for the new Pearl Harbor event, which became 9/11, which created the invasion of Afghanistan, which then created the War of Terror. And they swept in NATO, of course. Now we have an international army invading countries under the guise of fighting for freedom when all they're doing is destabilizing countries and fighting for an agenda that they've been planning for decades. Unbelievable, this. But there's this story... it's been something that we've been following for a long time, but we have to see the facts here, which this article you should read for yourself. The entirety is very, very clear. Now, during a speech given Thursday at Cairo's American University, I believe, U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo delivered remarks that some analysts have likened to a mix of evangelism and historical revisionism regarding the U.S.'s historical role in the Middle Eastern and Northern African affairs. Now, Pompeo began his speech by stating, quote, "It's the truth, lowercase t, that I'm here to talk about today. It is a truth that isn't often spoken in this part of the world, but because I'm a military man by training, I'll be very blunt and direct today. America is a force for good in the Middle East," which in and of itself, I'm sure many just chuckled at. Prior to his speech, at an earlier press conference, Pompeo made a similarly jarring characterization of U.S. involvement in the Middle East, stating, quote, "America has always been a liberating force, not an occupying power in the Middle East. We've never dreamed of domination." It's just like, it's amazing this is a complete disconnect from reality. And they know this. They're not stupid. They just know that people will hear them say it and point to them and say, well, he said that, so that's what's real. But this just completely disconnects from the fact of, you know, the countries that they've left in complete ruin. Afghanistan, Iraq, Libya. It's unbelievable to think that, and talking about not being an occupying power, what about all the illegal coups they've carried out, such as Operation Ajax in Iran, or the attempts in Nicaragua, the coup in Congo, the ongoing things they continue to do when they literally, by definition, are an occupying force?
never dreamed of Dominion. Sorry, Mike Pompeo, you've written about it in your own documentation. They literally think so little of your intelligence as an American that they think you won't do the smallest amount of research to look up what they literally said over the past 20 years, which is literally about domination and American preeminence and you know, hegemony around the world. It's actually humorous to me that they can even stand up with a straight face and say this, but it's because they're sociopaths. They don't care about reality. Now, he continued in his presentation. Pompeo made several other remarks that painted America as saviors of the Middle East, despite the fact that their destabilizing presence has been widely acknowledged. And he says, and despite the country's role in recent wars in the region that have caused tremendous suffering and loss of life, you know, like Iraq, where over 1 million people died. But, you know, they're there for, they're good. That's a good, it's positive we kill 1 million people, but we're here to make good things happen for the Middle East. It's macabrely humorous. It really is. Now, in defiance of the U.S.'s Middle East track record, Pompeo asserted, we've never dreamed of domination in the Middle East. Can you say the same about Iran? Well, it's funny you ask that, Mike Pompeo, because the last time Iran invaded another country was 1798. While the U.S., since 2001, has invaded and occupied Iraq, continues to occupy Afghanistan, helped foment the Syrian conflict by arming terrorist groups, supports and arms the Saudi-led coalition in Yemen, and helped overthrow the government of Libya, which is currently selling slaves on the open market. Funny how that works. You know, fact versus reality versus fiction. It's actually really ridiculous that they think that you won't simply look this stuff up. But the sad reality is a lot of them won't. That's why you're here. That's why I'm here, to show you what's really going on. Now, Pompeo then rather ominously stated, and here's where it gets interesting, the age of self-inflicted American shame is over. And so are the policies that produce so much needless suffering, you know, which is, you know, their policies. Their policies of occupying and bombing civilians to save civilians. And he says, now comes the real new beginning. Now, that is ominous. Talking about like the, you know, new Pearl Harbor event or the fact that Trump recently said that we need another 9/11. I hope we don't need another 9/11 to bring the country together. Maybe this is the new beginning we're talking about. Sounds pretty dangerous for Iran. As the article puts it, in other words, the shame around the U.S.'s forever wars and history of military intervention, both covert and overt, in the Middle East is over. So we're not going to feel bad about killing people around the world in Pompeo's eyes. Providing a real new beginning that heralds the return of the U.S. as liberators to the Middle East. Now, Iran, the undeniable target of the apparently soon-to-arrive wave of U.S. interventionism, promised in Pompeo's recent speech, wasted no time in firing back at Pompeo's assertion that the U.S. is a force for good in one of the world's most geopolitically important regions. Following Pompeo's assertion that, quote, when America retreats, chaos often follows. Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif countered on Twitter that, quote, whenever U.S. interferes, chaos, repression, and resentment follows. And here is his tweet that says that same thing. Now, it says, the day Iran mimics U.S. clients and Mike Pompeo's human rights models, be it the Shah or current butchers, to become a normal, quote, country, is the day hell freezes over. Best for the U.S. to just get over the loss of Iran. Now, I'm not saying that Iran or Zavad is always right or always good, but he's right here. What he says here is correct. This is simply fact versus fiction. It is absolutely unbelievable to me that he can stand there with a straight face, Mike Pompeo, and ignore the trail of destruction that's been left since 9/11. And even before that, but since 9/11, the destabilized and absolutely broken countries left in the wake of U.S. foreign policy, and stand there and literally pretend to be a force for good in the Middle East. And this has nothing to do with just ignoring the terrorist presence. What's happened has been because of the U.S. Libya is always the best example, where they literally armed and funded the very terrorists that are now in control, selling slaves on the open market. And after that, they just pretend like it's no longer a problem. Well, we got Gaddafi out of the way, who at the time when he ruled, left Libya, they literally had the highest quality of life in the entire continent of Africa. Simple fact, look it up. And since then, the country has devolved into an absolute chaos state run by extremists. Funny how that liberation worked out for the Libyan people. Iraq, who's currently trying to kick U.S. out, Afghanistan, all these countries are completely destabilized and absolutely more extremist than before. Countries that once allowed Christianity, such as Iraq or even Assyria still does, are the ones they're trying to fight. And once they leave, it's completely extremist. Well, they don't allow Christianity. Now, recognize the absurdity of him standing up and saying this. This is them literally trying to rewrite history and trying to propagandize people who they literally think are too stupid to do their own research, so they don't actually see what's going on. Hopefully, this can break through to people, as we have Israel openly attacking Syria, and they're not saying a word. Think about that. Think about the absurdity of that. Facts versus fiction. Narrative versus action. Hopefully people can begin to wake up to this. Thank you for tuning in today. Hopefully I woke you up to something that's going on out there. Hopefully this message resonates with you. And if so, please get it out there. Spread the word. Wake people up to what's going on. Because that is my charge. That is my mission in life, is to wake people up to the reality. And I may be wrong. We all can be wrong from time to time. And I'm okay with that. Because my intent is good. And I will come back and let you know. And in the spirit of goodwill, it turns out I was mistaken about the baby in the stroller, white yellow vest woman walking down the street. It turns out it was a social experiment. And what I said about the baby part was incorrect. However, she was arrested for wearing a yellow vest. That's a side conversation I had with somebody else. But the point is that we all make mistakes. And the reality is that we have to continue to do our best to wake people up to the real problems. We can have difference of opinions on major things, but the reality is we have to see that in their eyes, it's the establishment versus the people, us versus them. As long as we stay split on the two-party sides, we will be lost. Thank you for tuning in again. I love you all. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.
Defense Minister Moshe Yaalon talking just a couple of weeks ago. Israel is going to hurt Lebanese civilians, to include kids of the family. We went through a very long discussion. We did it then. We did it in the Gaza Strip. We are going to do it in any round of hostilities in the future. That's the Defense Minister. This is the Military Chief of Staff, Benny Gantz. The next round of violence will be worse and see this suffering increase. He headed up the military assaults on Gaza, the last two. This is the Minister for Education in the Netanyahu government. There will never be a peace plan with the Palestinians. I will do everything in my power to make sure they never get a state. He also said, if you catch terrorists, you simply have to kill them. I've killed a lot of Arabs in my life, and there's no problem with that. This is the Minister for Justice. Palestinians are all enemy combatants. This also includes the mothers of the martyrs. They should follow their sons. Nothing would be more just. They should go, as should the physical homes in which they raised the snakes. Otherwise, more little snakes will be raised there. That's the Israeli Minister for Justice in the last few months. The Israeli Minister for Deputy Minister for Defense. Palestinians are beasts. They are not human. The Minister for Foreign Affairs, CP Hotley, this is the last one. My position is that between the sea and the Jordan River, there needs to be one state only, the State of Israel. There is no place for any agreement of any kind that discusses the concession of Israeli sovereignty over lands conquered in 1967. Now, these are the official statements of several ministers of the current government of Israel. In one case, actually advocating genocide of all Palestinians, including children, and calling them snakes. Now, can I ask you, Taoiseach, do you not think that if we're defining terrorism, that is the language and thinking of terrorists? That it is absolutely unacceptable in civilized politics, in civilized international relations, for the heads of government of a state that we carry on normal relations with and who you met in Paris to advocate those sort of views when we know they have also led on to the deaths of thousands of Palestinians, innocent men, women and children. What have you to say, Taoiseach, about those sort of views being expressed by the Israeli government?